Hello, and welcome to Let's Talk Future podcast here at Oppenheimer. This episode is going to be on one of the key topics facing our economy and the AI industry, which is supply of data centers and electric power. It's my pleasure to be hosting Nazir Khan, the co-founder and CTO of TeraWulf. Nazir and TeraWulf know more about the confluence between electric generation and high-performance compute than anyone. They were in the business of building power plants for the last 20 years, and they're in the process of building out 1.5 gigawatts worth of data center capacity throughout the United States. The locations that they build are generally very attractive. They have lots of networking that's low latency. They generally have low cost and high quality power near population densities. In the United States, we are seeing a major supply imbalance of data centers. We are basically running out of data center capacity. And this is all driven by AI infrastructure spending on CapEx, which has grown tenfold in the last 5 years to $600 billion. We're going to get into it, but TeraWulf has recognized that we need to increase the utilization of our power in the United States because at any given time, we're only using about 30% of it. And that is a fairly unique approach. They are also now starting to build out some of their own power. Nazir, with that, I'll open up to you giving a bit more information on your background and the company. I'm sure I missed a lot, but go ahead.
Good morning, and Tim, thank you for having us. I think having an understanding of our background is important to help understand where we are today, and likewise, we know where we think things are headed here, both on the AI data center side as well as from a power generation perspective. Prior to founding TeraWulf, the team at TeraWulf was in the power generation space. We owned, operated, and developed power generation facilities, both domestically in the United States, as well as a number of overseas jurisdictions. We did both thermal assets and renewable assets. We operated facilities, we constructed facilities, and we did that for ourselves and for third parties. So we had a very strong background and expertise in understanding what kind of power is needed where, what's the regulatory environment to get that power online, and where can we kind of monetize the value of that kilowatt hour of electricity in the highest possible way. And we did that for 20, 25 years. In mid 2010s, we started to have this discussion internally and saying, hey, the power markets have changed, but the volume of kilowatt hours of electricity that we could sell was significantly going down. And so this was a function of both the concerted push to decarbonize the supply stack, as well as how the power markets and capacity markets in various parts of the United States were transitioning and developing. And so we made this decision and said, hey, the business of selling wholesale electricity doesn't really work. And so we sold off all of our power generating assets and flipped to the load side. And we said, hey, if we can play closer to the intersection of energy and data, we should be able to monetize the value of that kilowatt hour of electricity in a better way. And that was really the premise and thesis that we had back in 2018, 2019, when we sold off our entire fleet. And fast forward to today, I don't think we could have predicted kind of this AI gold rush in terms of just the need for capacity and how AI works and the scale of power it would need. But the fundamental thesis of saying, hey, if we can play closer to the intersection of energy and data, has generally played out, right? Again, think about AI, it's the next kind of generation form of data, and it requires quite a bit of scale and capacity to support that. So that general thesis of being able to play closer to that intersection, we believe has played out.
So AI has turned the data center industry on its head. We're growing capacity around 25% per year. We're increasing the utilization of overall power in the United States by 200 to 300 basis points, which we've never seen before. And the size of these data centers are 10x what we saw historically. So they could have fairly large impacts on different areas. This is a concern for consumers that potentially it's not good for the environment and maybe driving up their electric bills. Nazir, what can we do to slow down this pressure on the power grids, and what are you guys doing specifically?
So as you noted earlier, we think we have a pretty interesting perspective on both the power side, where's the power available, how do you get it, and then as well as just kind of what does it take to kind of get that power into a building, and how do you construct that, design that, build that, right? So on one hand, you have this kind of load growth coming from the sector called AI, which needs a lot of power. And again, it needs, you know, gigawatts of power, but there's 1,500 gigawatts of power installed in the United States. And so, yes, it's a lot of power, but it's not some so significant that it's, you know, it's a majority of the grid. But it's happening at the same time that the markets and systems that were designed to deliver new generation capacity to meet load growth, wherever it comes from, you know, whether it's from residential growth, commercial growth, industrial growth, wherever it may be coming from, haven't really worked. Now, leading to this discussion around, you know, do you bring your own generation, or how are these data centers going to get all the power that they need? Should they bear a responsibility for that? And that's, you know, kind of where we think we're particularly well suited, given, again, both our experience and expertise in developing, designing, and constructing power generation facilities, as well as understanding, you know, from a load side, what the customers are looking for, and how we can kind of be a conduit to, you know, procure and deliver that capacity as efficiently and quickly as possible.
There's a big movement now because we are running out of electric capacity for data center providers to build out their own generating capacity. And I think you guys will be doing some of this yourselves. And obviously you have quite a bit of background, are you? So where are you in this process?
It is being talked about quite a bit. And if you pull up, you know, I think, GE, Siemens, and other large-scale OEM manufacturers for gas turbine equipment, their backlogs have increased significantly here over the past couple of years. And all of that capacity, right, will start to come online in 27, 28, and beyond. So we're starting to see that ramp up for sure. There's still this question, I think, you know, of depending upon the jurisdiction and market that you're working in, is that enough? And I think, you know, most folks would say that what's on the drawing board today is not enough. And so it's coming, it's there, but it probably is not enough to meet all of the needs that people may have, you know, with respect to kind of the demand side coming from AI.
So many electric power companies are requiring data center providers to build out their own electric generating capacity near where their data centers are, basically off the grid. What do you think about this trend?
You know, when we have these discussions with folks, I always remind people that there's 8,760 hours in a year. And at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. on any given day, the system is massively oversupplied, right? The ability to generate power is 3x what's actually being consumed. And if you look at where peak demand ends up, you know, it's usually measured in the 50, 100, 200 hours a year period, right? So if you think about, you know, even 200 hours a year over 8,760, it's actually a pretty small percentage. And so to the extent that you have loads that can be assets back to the grid and not really show up when peak demand is hitting, that is a very meaningful tool in being able to balance the grid. You know, as we've talked about, right, there's a supply side solution and there's a demand side solution. Historically, data centers were thought to be these inflexible loads that had to run 24/7, no matter what, and the customers were willing to pay whatever it took to be able to have the privilege to do so. And given the scale of these AI data centers, you know, we've had the position for a number of years that it will quickly not become an economic question. It's really fundamentally, if you want to, your load wants to behave in that way, you are having an impact on the broader system. From our perspective, I think that inflexibility is not inherent in AI data centers, meaning, you know, it's an absolute requirement or necessity. It's more a function of where these data centers came from. If we wind back even 5 or 6 years ago, you know, large data centers were 40 and 60 megawatts. And so 40 and 60 megawatts in the context of tens of gigawatts in a 1,500 gigawatt system, sure, if you want 40 megawatts, you want to run 24/7, and you're willing to pay for that privilege, have at it. You know, here's what it costs you, have at it. If all of a sudden you're saying it's not 40 megawatts, but it's 4,000 megawatts, now your behaviors have a fundamental and direct impact on how the rest of the grid operates and the cost structure for the rest of the grid. And so our view has been that, you know, these data centers have been thought to be these inflexible loads, not because they can't be flexible. It's more because no one's really asked the question. There's no real economic incentive to do so. Today, you're seeing there's a massive economic incentive, right? If you pull up...
Well, it's almost a necessity, right? I mean, I think many electric utilities won't even allow you to tie unless you agree to deprioritize during peak usage.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And then so you pick up any utility, the DOE, they've all highlighted, hey, we need to both add more generation, but we also have to have these loads be more flexible in nature, right? They need to be able to curtail. And so we have spent a tremendous amount of time with our customers and partners in thinking through what does that mean? And, you know, how should these loads behave? And as these loads ramp up, what are the characteristics that they should have? And as you just mentioned, the utilities from their perspective are requiring it. They're saying, hey, if you're really going to be adding such significant load to our system, we need you to kind of behave in these certain ways. And so that's been an important part of how we've thought about it. And again, we think it's an important part about how the sector is going to grow. If you think about adding tens and, you know, of gigawatts of capacity per year, having loads that, again, can be assets back to the grid, can be stakeholders that are helping, you know, kind of balance the grid out and helping with that utilization across the grid are going to be welcomed. And those loads that are kind of just exacerbating issues that exist in the grid and adding to cost, again, those loads are going to be kind of told to either stay away or they're going to be put to the back of the line.
So clearly, you think and I think we're going to need hyperscalers to build out some of their own generating capacity, and they're going to have to deprioritize your peak usage. You think more hyperscalers are willing to do this? Where are they in the process?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if you pick up any one of the hyperscalers' commentary around, you know, how they're bringing loads on and how those loads are going to behave and the obligations that they think they have back to the grid, I think you'll pick up on those themes. You know, I think Microsoft put out a couple weeks ago their 5-point plan on how they're going to kind of come into markets and what the expectations should be from those local stakeholders on how they're going to operate. And again, embedded within all of these things is this idea that our loads are part of this broader system. And if we're part of a broader system, you know, we have some obligations that we have in ensuring that, again, we're again, not exacerbating issues that exist.
So, Nizar, you're basically in charge of all the operations for the company, the four major components, which is basically finding the sites and locations and then building out those sites and then finding the customers to use the sites. Can you talk about your skill set in all four of these, and I guess specifically in finding, you know, very large sites to build these out?
Again, for 25, 30 years, we spent our time identifying where to put power onto the grid. Where do we site it? What's the regulatory environment that it operates in? And so likewise, now we're kind of doing the inverse, which is where do we pull power off of the grid? Or maybe where do we pull power off of the grid and augment that with incremental generation that we can bring? And so typically you'll find that, you know, we've been operating at old industrial sites. You know, our site in upstate New York is the site of a former coal-fired power plant. We've looked at a number of other former industrial sites. And the reason we do that is typically those industrial sites were either bringing in a lot of power to do something or putting a lot of power back onto the grid as a generating station. And so typically there's quite a bit of embedded electrical infrastructure that exists there. And it usually also comes with some sort of cleanup or remediation as well. So something used to happen there, that's done, and the site may need to be cleaned up. And so that's typically where, you know, we think we have quite a bit of expertise, is both in understanding the value of that embedded infrastructure, but also being comfortable in cleaning up or doing whatever remediation is required to be able to fully utilize benefit from that site.
You have obviously refurbished and renovated many, many large power plants. And this has become a good skill set for data centers because these things are basically the size of power plants or larger at this point. And I believe you have helped Google to design their data centers, and they've largely standardized around this. Can you talk about how data center designs have evolved with AI and what are the current bottlenecks?
What's interesting about the space right now is the data centers that are being built and designed today, they've only been built and designed for the last literally couple years. And if you think about the evolution of the hardware that's happening as well, every 6 months, you know, there's kind of a new latest and greatest with respect to hardware that has, you know, ever increasing, you know, both density requirements as well as even kind of cooling requirements. And so we're at this point in time where some of the capacity that we're building for partners like Google, they're the very first iterations of what's being built. And so we've spent a considerable amount of time with Google FluidStack and others, and really kind of thinking through what does that base design look like? How do we ensure that we are creating an environment that optimizes the value of the hardware that they're intending to bring here? And again, some of the hardware that we're deploying is literally, you know, the very first iterations or the very first serial numbers of the hardware kind of coming off of the assembly line. And so our work is just really, you know, kind of critical to that development. And if you think about, you know, we pride ourselves in being, you know, kind of electrical experts and really understanding kind of the flow of electricity and power and distribution. And even in these discussions that we've had with hyperscalers and others, we found that that deep expertise on electric distribution is something that's even unique for them. And we've been able to kind of add value to how they think about their design and the potential solutions and options that may exist to kind of optimize the use of their hardware as well. And so, yes, there's a fair amount of coordination that goes into it.
In the same vein, how about bottlenecks to construction? And can you meet your required schedules at this point? Can you get the equipment and the labor required to meet your construction schedules?
When we talk about construction, you know, I tell people there are, you know, literally over a million labor hours are required to put these massive data centers together. And every single day, you got to get a certain amount of work done. And even if you miss 2 or 3 or 4 hours in a particular day, you got to make it up that next day. And so construction really comes down to kind of every day being able to hit the tasks that you have targeted and not having this kind of continual slip. And just think about, you know, if you did 95% or 90% every day, you compound that over the course of, you know, 3, 4, 6, 8 months, you're not going to end up at 90%. You're going to end up at some number, you know, significantly lower than 90%, right? So that's where the diligence and focus on every single day getting done what we're supposed to get done.
So it looks like you have a lot of visibility on getting the sites, designing them, and getting them built on time. But it does require massive amounts of money, $10 million per megawatt. So you're going to need somewhere in the order of $15 billion. How do you raise that much money?
So if we think about this, you know, I think earlier you'd mentioned, you know, 500 megawatts is a large, you know, average size power plant. That 500 megawatt power plant probably costs you $1.5 billion, plus or minus, to kind of build. A 500 megawatt data center will cost you something like $5 billion, right? So from a capital perspective, every single megawatt of these data centers is far more capital intensive as well. And that $5 billion is just our CapEx, right? That's just building and delivering the data center. The data center is then populated with hardware that is anywhere from $25 to $40 million per megawatt on top of that. So, you know, at that, so again, multiples of what we're spending. So if we're spending $5 billion, you know, our customers are spending, you know, $12.5 to $15 billion of capital. So again, from a capital intensity perspective, each and every megawatt of these AI data centers is extremely capital intensive. And so we believe, you know, we've got a very strong team. Our CFO, Patrick Fleury, has been, you know, involved in financings, you know, significantly, you know, large financings for his, you know, 25-year career. We, you know, raised a little over, you know, $4.5 billion in the bond market towards the end of last year. So again, there's this capital intensity and being able to bring the capital to bear quickly, because the construction schedules that we have are all from the day we sign a contract. You know, it requires us to run hard every single day in kind of getting out there.
One thing investors are worried about is just the fungibility of these data center sites. What if the compute changes, the power requirements change? Is it possible for you to use different types of semiconductors or different types of cooling in the same facilities?
What we try to deliver is a capacity that can be used again for GPUs, TPUs, and what may be coming, right? It's not just what's out there today, but also kind of with an eye towards what could be coming here over the next couple of years. And so fundamentally, we kind of, I'd say we deliver three key components. We deliver kind of an electric distribution, right? We bring a bunch of power in. We provide all the tools to kind of distribute that down to the chip, right? Kind of bringing the capacity to kind of distribute that power down to a chip. We have a massive liquid cooling loop that allows either to bring that cooling loop either directly to the chip or to the rear door of a server rack. And then finally, we kind of provide networking that takes the data that's created on site and gets it transported, you know, kind of to any corner of the earth within fractions of a second. And so we have an eye towards, you know, ensuring that this capacity can be used. And we're signing, you know, 10, 15, 20-year leases. So our customers are also asking us those very same questions and ensuring that, hey, once we get through this, you know, current phase of hardware, years 5, 6, and 7, do we still have the capacity that we think we can kind of repurpose and reutilize for
whatever the hardware may look like at that point in time.
So when you're willing to deprioritize your peak usage, you also get a fairly large discount off the price that you pay for electric power. Do your customers, you know, like this? You know, how important is it to them?
You know, we think quite a bit about how we're locating these loads and where can we add loads that are, again, incremental and beneficial to the broader grid. And then also, you know, we're spending a ton of time thinking through what are structures we have so that we can kind of, you know, modulate and moderate kind of that peak demand. And so again, the resulting cost of power that we think our customers will bear should be a lot lower. And if you compound the 10, 15, 20% savings on your cost of power over the 15 or 20 year contract, I mean, it adds up to, you know, literally hundreds of millions of dollars of value because of kind of the savings that they have. And so I would say that, you know, we also spend quite a bit of time with our customers and highlighting that, you know, beyond just the value that they're getting in the capacity, the fact that they're locating in places where we believe they're getting a more attractive delivered cost of power, you know, adds up quite a bit over the long bit as well.
So Nizar, can you talk about customer demand out there? Is it accelerating? Can you just give us any description on how long the excessive and high demand could last?
Yeah. Yeah, demand remains very robust for whatever megawatts we can think we can bring online here over the next few years. We think we will have multiple counterparties willing to take that capacity down. That's been our experience to date. And we think, you know, given the discussions that we've been having, we'll continue to see that going forward as well. So for the next few years, demand remains very robust. Every megawatt that we have available, we think will be placed. And so to your point, you know, how long can this go without having to bring new generation capacity online? That, you know, I think, you know, depends on the market you're in, but we're getting pretty close to that point. And again, you're seeing the early stages of that almost becoming a requirement. It's not a requirement, it's everywhere. And sometimes people may say, I'll wait 5 years. 5 years is a long time. But, you know, if you want to accelerate that timeline, really come on here the next couple of years, we do think that's going to become an ever increasingly important part of the solution. So as we think about sites that we have and sites that we're looking to further develop, we're looking at both, again, what's the capacity we can pull off from the grid, but as well as, you know, what's the capacity we can put back onto the grid and, again, kind of be a part of the solution for adding to the supply here. So it's exciting times. And as I said earlier, it's this confluence of both AI driving, you know, meaningful incremental demand, as well as, you know, kind of this backdrop where the markets that were, you know, really designed and developed to bring new generation online for everybody, for any kind of, you know, a demand source, really hasn't worked. And so if we can really be kind of the glue that can balance both out, we think, you know, we've got a pretty strong road ahead of us. And, you know, the team here is extremely excited about the opportunities that we have. There's quite a bit of work, but there's a lot to do.
Well, Nizar, great job and very exciting times. We know you're working around the clock, and I really appreciate your time here. We know you guys are great at finding sites and getting this stuff built out, and it's a critical skill set as we speak here. I think the next 2 to 3 years, you're going to be very busy. I really appreciate the time, and good luck, and thank you.
Thank you, Tim.